John Wilkerson with Jimmy Hyams, and we head now to the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline for a very special guest.
We do. Danny White, Tennessee Athletics Director. Danny, how are you today?
I'm doing great. How y'all doing?
Well, we're doing fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us. As I'm sure you know, the Vol Nation worried about losing Josh Heupel to Oklahoma. What is your response when you hear that?
I think it's great that our coaches are looked at that way. I love the fact that our fans see what Josh and his staff have done in just a short time, really transforming the culture of our football program. Obviously, he has history with that particular school, but I know his commitment here. And, I mean, shoot, he's working his tail off right now recruiting. So love that our coaches are looked at favorably whenever that happens. Also know that it's my job to support them and make sure that we're continuing to grow our programs, and that's exactly what we're doing in football.
So you're confident Coach Heupel will be Tennessee's coach in 2022?
I am. Yeah, he's very committed. Josh is a serious-minded, process-oriented leader, and he's recruited a phenomenal staff here, and what they're doing with our program, I think we're ahead of schedule, and I think we're going to continue to be ahead of schedule as they keep working their plan, and recruiting right now is a huge part of that.
Danny, there have been some monster contracts given to football coaches, which I'm sure you know, whether it's at LSU or at, of course, at Alabama, it's been that way, Michigan State. And I wonder how much you have to pay attention to that in terms of trying to handle your head coach and your staff.
Yeah, we talk about restoring the power T, bringing Tennessee back to being a leader nationally in college sports, competing for SEC championships. And when you say that means you need to be serious about competing for national championships. And we are in all of our sports, but talking about football here, we want to get back to like we once were, competing year in and year out for conference and national championships. So we have to understand what that means. I think that our resource investment needs to be commensurate with what our expectations are competitively. But also be smart and judicious with particularly our donor philanthropic investments, make sure we're using the resources that we have in a smart way to invest in facilities that matter as it relates to our student athletes and recruiting and as it relates to our fan experience and investing in personnel and making sure that we have really talented coaches. And I think we have a top-notch football staff. We have one of the top assistant pools in the country. Something that was already in place when I got here, and I feel strongly about that as well. And we need to make sure that we're doing everything we can to be proactive with all of our head coaches, including Josh.
We heard Coach Heupel, rightly so, sing the praises of the seniors that were recognized and celebrated on Saturday ahead of the Vanderbilt game. And then, of course, you get to see those shots where it could be just one lone figure that you see on Shields-Watkins Field or in Neyland Stadium that's just drinking in every last ounce they can of their time wearing the orange and white. And when you look at the core group of a special collection of players that stayed at Tennessee, wanted to make sure that last year wasn't their legacy, that they wanted to stay, help with the transition, and finish strong. What does this group of football seniors mean to you?
I think they're special. It's been a very fast and furious transition getting here, and I personally have met so many new people and so many new student athletes. But my first day on the job, I met with the leadership of our football team, and several of those guys are ones that we celebrated their senior day this past weekend. And I think a couple of them were maybe some of those images on the field, soaking it in after the game. I saw that. So just really, it's been an honor to get to know those guys and look forward to continuing to grow my relationship with them personally. It's only been about 10 months since I've been here, but it's so much fun watching the growth of the relationships amongst our players and then with the staff. And for me to just watch the leadership of that senior class and knowing where our program was and they know very well to where they've lifted it in a short period of time. And then seeing our fans kind of rally around that. We have this awesome, passionate fan base, and it's been a fun season and a fun transition to watch all that occur. I think Josh said something to the effect in the locker room about impactful this senior class has been to restoring a championship caliber football program. And I hope they know that they've had a huge, huge impact on this athletics department. And they also know that we're not done. We're going to go try to win a bowl game.
That's exactly what my next question was going to be. How exciting is it that this group of seniors, as well as this Tennessee team that has done so well, even those that just joined the program for the first time in the first year this season, all of the hard work, working with the staff, rowing in the same direction, how exciting is it that they, as well as the Tennessee fans, get to celebrate a bowl somewhere?
Yeah, it's going to be great. And it's fun. You know, this is my first rodeo going through it. We're in a conference where we have some great partnerships with some awesome bowl games and opportunities, experiences for our student athletes, but opportunities to play some great opponents and some brand name teams. And so we're excited no matter where we go. We know that there's going to be an opportunity for a great game and a great experience for our team and our fans. And hopefully we come out on the right side of the ledger.
Our guest, Danny White, Tennessee Athletics Director. Danny, what would be your role as athletic director in trying to get Tennessee to the best bowl possible? Do you talk with Coach Heupel and say, where do you want to go? Do you consult with others and then submit your list to the commissioner of the SEC to say, this is our order of preference?
We do, yeah. And there's a process through the conference, and they do a great job, I think, of probably herding cats at times as it relates to, you know, prioritizing what teams the bowls would like. And one thing I'm learning very quickly is the passion and the size of our fan base makes us a very attractive candidate for the bowl games. They love Tennessee, and you guys probably know that. So that's awesome, and I think that our fans are going to support in big numbers no matter where we go this year, and look forward to that. But then also hearing our preferences, and we have, as I mentioned, there's not a bad bowl in the SEC. They're all great opportunities and in locations that we'd be excited about. I think matchup for us is important, and we would love to have a great game against a good football program.
This was your first year as Tennessee's athletic director going through a football season. I just wonder, what were some of the things that you really liked that occurred, and what are some of the things that you think, hey, we can improve on this for next year?
You're just getting to experience the tradition, the pageantry. Even, you know, we had 8 home games, and it impacted me pretty significantly every single time, watching our pregame stuff and what our band does, and all that was awesome. The Vol walk, all the stuff that happens on game day. Getting around to some of the tailgates and visiting with some of our fans, I learn a lot in those conversations just through their experiences, and it helps me really understand a lot more about Tennessee, and I'll continue to learn as I have more of those conversations with alumni and fans and donors. In terms of improvements, I think we made some strides for our in-game presentation. Our marketing staff did a great job of trying to modernize some things, but then also honoring our tradition in different ways and balancing that. I really am pleased with what we did from an in-game presentation. I think we got some work to do from a fan experience standpoint. And some of it's just infrastructure, but the concession lines, I know, continued to be an issue. And, you know, we got 100,000 people in the building. And I want to find ways to make it a better experience for our fans. We are actually seeing the same exact issue in Thompson Bowling, and that's why we've added some concessions under heated tents exterior to the building to try to alleviate that. But there's always stuff we can get better at. We know that. I appreciate our fans' passion and their patience at times. Earlier in the year, we had a staffing issue, as everyone in sport is dealing with the pandemic, but we were able to make some adjustments and make it as good of a fan experience as we can. But next year will be better, and the year after even better, as we do some renovations at the stadium, we can solve some of the infrastructure issues and make it a better and better experience for our fans.
You've talked with us before about how excited you are for what is to come in terms of improving as much as you can the facility that is Neyland Stadium and Shields-Watkins Field. Has any of those projects begun now that the season's over?
They have. We already have equipment in the stadium to tear out the lower west side seats. That's what I'm told. That's the part of the stadium that's the only part left that's actually 100 years old. Structurally, it had to be replaced, and that's one of the reasons why we moved forward with that Lower West Club. That's going to be a really exciting fan experience with a more space in the seating bowl, with a more comfortable, bigger club seat, but a unique hospitality space back underneath those seats and decks that you can look out right out onto the field on either side of our team bench. That's going to be an awesome project, and it's already underway to be completed for the start of next season. And then the north end zone party deck as well. We've already started on the preliminary stuff in terms of construction of that. That'll be open for next season, as well as the north end zone video board.
Coach Harper and the Lady Vols had a huge win over Texas before going out to Las Vegas and winning both of their games out there as they took part in a preseason pre-conference tournament. And then you had the Volunteers go up to Connecticut. They didn't get the win against Villanova, but considering your family's history, I'm sure that everybody, especially you all, can enjoy a win with your dad being the former athletic director at Duke. Any win over North Carolina is a good one, but for Tennessee basketball, it was their second ever and their first since 49. So I'm sure that you're enjoying what both the Vols and the Lady Vols are getting done on the hardwood.
Yeah, both programs knocking on the door of the top 10. We've had a great start. Obviously, a young team, particularly on the men's side, and I think we learned a lot in that Villanova game, and it showed in the North Carolina game. Looking forward to heading over to the arena here shortly for our game against Presbyterian tonight. But really proud of the way both teams have started, and I think we got a chance to have a special season with both basketball programs.
Our guest, Danny White, Tennessee Athletics Director. Danny, I had a booster that recently told me thinks the capacity of Neyland Stadium should be only 75,000. Some think that 100,000 is the magic number. But I wonder, from your perspective, do you feel like you need to reduce the capacity at Neyland Stadium to create a demand for tickets?
You know, we're going to go through a process. We've already started doing some focus groups and survey work with our fans, and we'll be working with architects here in the coming months and come up with a plan that specifically addresses not just 22. We have these two projects I just talked about that will open for the 22 season, but what do we do for 23, 24, perhaps even 25 for the full-scale renovation that we know that the building needs? And as we go through that, we'll make that decision. What's the right capacity? I will say I was really impressed. I mean, we sold out that stadium this year, coming off a pandemic with some challenging years in terms of competitively the last several years. So the power of this fan base was on full display as I saw a full 102,455. That was pretty awesome. So we showed that we can still generate a big crowd, that this fan base has that kind of power. But again, we'll go through that process, and that's not a decision I certainly need to make on an island. I think we need to be thoughtful and strategic about where we land from a capacity standpoint.
You mentioned many times about one of your priorities is to make sure the student-athlete experience is a quality experience. And I just wonder, there was a player at Central Florida, he was a star player, Otis Anderson Jr., that was shot and killed by his father recently. And I just wonder what kind of impact that has on you as a person and an athletic director to have been at a program where you had a great player like that lost his life.
Yeah, it just happened last night, and just tragic. It's been on my mind all day. I think anybody that knew Otis has probably had a similar experience today, and that probably be on my mind for a while. Just a lost life way too young, unbelievably talented person and player, but more importantly, person. Just feel awful for everyone that knew Otis, his family, his friends. All of the UCF fan base, they're all hurting right now. It's a really, really tough set of circumstances. And his mom is in the hospital. She was shot as well. Mm-hmm. So we're praying for her and hoping for the best possible outcome for her.
Goodness, what a horrible situation. At the start of our conversation, you and Jimmy were talking about what we have seen, and that is some of these deals as schools that had vacancies are announcing new hires, and And I'm just wondering, from your vantage point, if you might give us a peek behind the curtain. So many times, and you fully understand that both sides, a school as well as the coach itself, want protections built in into any deal. And so sometimes there's a buyout if a coach wants to leave and go take another job. And other times there's if the buyout put in by the coach's side, that if things go south, then perhaps there's a little protection in their future earnings and things like that. But we have seen schools really paint themselves into corners, Tennessee being one historically that's done that time and time again. As you approach deals with coaches, how do you view it in the seat in which you sit, that you understand they want protection, but also you need to make sure that you fiscally protect your university as well?
Yeah, I think you just got to be smart. And I think it's more than just a contract negotiation. I think it's about how we're building programs, and whether that's the support of our fans, how we're recruiting, developing players, the administrative support we give coaches. I think a lot of times and we're all fans, right? I work in college sports, but I'm as big of a college football or basketball fan as anybody. And sometimes we get caught up in brand name, whether it's a brand name of a coach or a player or whatever it is. And I think that we're going to rebuild the Tennessee football program into a bigger and better version than we've ever had here by being thoughtful and process oriented and consistent, and at times patient. You know, we're excited about the way this season has gone. It's not going to be all roses all the time. But if we hire good people and support them in a consistent way, I know our fans are going to like the result. I think we have a great staff here, and we're going to pour our heart and soul as an administration into supporting them every single day. And when we do that, I know we're going to be successful. You get good people that are talented and are driven. It's inevitable that we'll find a way to get where we all want to be.
Danny, one other question. Do you have the mindset that Tennessee should never lose a coach to another school over money, or are you cautious about using the word never?
I guess I'm probably cautious about using the word never in any context, but we want to compete at the highest level. We need to be prepared to invest it at the highest level. So we're constantly looking for all of our coaches. As the season is winding down, we start benchmarking, and where are we in the SEC? What's our investment look like? And it's not just salaries, it's operating budget, and all the things you do that impacts winning and losing in a program. And when we have great years and we meet or exceed expectations, and then we need to make those adjustments and make sure we're being fair as it relates to what the market bears. There's a women's soccer market as much as there's a baseball market and a football and a volleyball market. We look at all that data across the SEC and across the nation to make sure that we're acting like the type of athletic department we say we want to be, which is a leader within the SEC and nationally.
All right. Hey, Danny, thank you so much. Appreciate that your visit, and we look forward to visiting with you in a couple of weeks. Enjoy the basketball game tonight.
All right. Sounds great, guys. Thanks for having me. Go ball.
Thank you.
Thank you. Danny White, Tennessee Athletics Director.
Joining us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline. This reminder, we're with you until 6:30 today, so we have about another hour left in the show. We look forward to being joined by John McClain of the Houston Chronicle as we'll turn our attention to the National Football League coming up to close this hour, and then we will have your chance to win with a Sports Fix at 6, and then that will be followed by Mark Pankratz as he'll join us to close out the program, talk some Tennessee hoops as the Volunteers get ready to take on Presbyterian College. Just a quick look at the two teams. Tennessee is 4-1 on the season, whereas the Blue Hose themselves are 5-2. It's the best start for Presbyterian College since they became a Division I program. So they are off to a good start. They just won 3 games in a weekend tournament in New Orleans. Tennessee leads the all-time series with 3 wins to none, so it's meeting number 4 tonight between Presbyterian and the Volunteers, and Tennessee up to, I believe it's number 13 in the Associated Press poll. We head to the Stanley Fenty and Gates Hotline as we get to say hello to our good friend John McClain of the Houston Chronicle. Fantastic follow on Twitter at McClain_on_NFL. You can follow his work at TexasSportsNation.com and Cron.com. John, how are you?
I'm doing great, guys. I hope you had a great Thanksgiving.
Happy to say yes, sir, and I hope the same for you. And tell me, as you do your fantastic coverage from one week to the next of the Texans and the National Football League, how big a distraction is it to have your beloved Baylor Bears in the Big 12 title game?
No, first of all, I thought sure Oklahoma was going to beat Oklahoma State, which would have made them have a rematch in Arlington at the TNT Stadium. And then when the Cowboys pulled it out, I tweeted, how about them Cowboys? Now, Baylor, which lost by, I think, 11 points to Oklahoma in October, is better equipped to beat them, but I still think Oklahoma State will win the game. And I'll tell you, what's going on in college football is just unbelievable to me. I've never seen anything like it. The money being thrown around by athletic directors and presidents. And I thought people, my friends from Oklahoma, were whining about Lincoln Riley doing all this clandestine stuff behind the scene to leave and the outrage. And I said, kind of like Oklahoma and Texas did to get out of the Big 12. And as I tweeted Saturday, the SEC, go ahead and take them. You know, we want teams that are in their conference championship games like Cincinnati and Houston. We don't need the Longhorns and Sooners. Let them go to the SEC and Vanderbilt beat up on them.
Tell me, do you think the Cougars have a chance to rain on the Bearcats parade?
Dana Holgorsen left West Virginia for Houston. They paid him a lot of money. Tillman Fertitta, the Rockets owner. Tillman is the chairman of the Board of Regents at Houston. And so he knew Holgorsen, and he made him, at the time, it was a lot of money. Let me tell you what. The offshoot of these $190 and $100 million contracts started by Jimbo Fisher, you think Nick Saban and Kirby Smart, or their agents, are not in there right now going, whoa, now wait a minute here. If those guys are worth that, what's my guy worth? There's going to be a domino effect, and ADs and presidents, they got to be pounding their forehead with the palm of their hands going, oh, my goodness, we're going to have to match these guys. And so I think it's great for college football, free enterprise. I told my guys at my radio station today, I said, if we were in, say, competition to be the best radio station in the country, and we were about to go in the top four, and I was a big reason for it, somebody offered me $100 million, I would say, see ya. And they said they'd say, see you too, and see if they could come be my caddies for that kind of money. So I don't blame people at all for doing this. And I would hate to see Cincinnati lose Luke Fickell. Maybe he'll go to Notre Dame. I can't wait till somebody throws it out there. Hey, Billy O'Brien's a big Catholic boy. Send him to South Bend. And I'm sure a lot of people in Alabama would like that. I have not seen his name mentioned yet. But is UT worried about Josh Heupel going back to Oklahoma?
No.
Okay. No. Well, that's one school. Doesn't have to worry. He got fired there, didn't he?
Yes.
And but, of course, he was a great quarterback. But right now, if you've got a hot coach, you better be doing like Baylor's doing for a week. Okay, here's the check. Just sign your name and fill out the amount.
Well, a couple of those coaches you mentioned, Smart and Saban, have the same agent, which I'm sure you know. So that's going to really be interesting. To John's question, Houston's won 11 in a row. They could be a threat to Cincinnati, don't you think?
They could be, but if they were playing at Houston, and it's amazing. University of Houston's campus here has got 40,000 students. They got alumni all over the city, but they just don't go to their football games. They built them a new stadium about 5 or 6 years ago. Really nice stadium right off downtown. Great view to all the skyscrapers downtown. And it galls me every time I'm watching them on TV and I see all these empty seats. It's only like 48,000 or 45,000. But can they win it? Yeah, sure they can. But, man, the Bearcats have been great for 2 years in a row. They're really close to getting in that Final Four. And I think the only way they could be derailed if it got out that he was leaving for another school like Notre Dame. And I hope that doesn't happen. But they got to be crazy in Cincinnati if they think they're going to keep him forever. That just doesn't happen.
I want to ask you about Matthew Stafford. And I know that you can spin stats any way you want. But He has a record of 9-67 against teams that are above 500. And you say, well, a lot of that's at Detroit, and that's true. But this year, teams above 500, he's 1-4 with 11 touchdowns and 6 interceptions. And teams that are 500 or worse, he's 6-0 with a 16 touchdown to 3 interception ratio. I just wonder, do you think he's capable of beating the better teams and winning big games?
It's interesting, Jimmy, since they made the trade for Von Miller and Odell Beckham Jr., they're 0-3. And they, right now, if you look at where they are, they're the fifth seed in the NFC behind Arizona, Green Bay, Tampa Bay, and Dallas. And Dallas and other teams lost 2 in a row and 3 of 4. So you don't want to be going south when you start crunch time of December, when the pretenders separated from the contenders. And they got beat in Los Angeles by the Cardinals. Now they still have to play the Cardinals. And their schedule, they'll beat Jacksonville, and they play at Arizona, Seattle. They should beat the Seahawks. Then at Minnesota, at Baltimore, and San Francisco. And only two teams on that schedule with losing records are Jacksonville and Seattle. So they could struggle. If they lose the last game to San Francisco and the 49ers have won 3 in a row and averaged 31.5 points in those three games, and they've also won like 4 or 5, they may not make the playoffs. And at one point, I think, were they, let's see, they were 7-0, and people thought they were the best team in the league. They left Houston after they won 38-22, being up 38-0, and I immediately put them number one on my rankings. But when you have a quarterback in Detroit, that's one thing. But when it continues to happen with a good roster and a good head coach, that's very telling about the quarterback.
Mm-hmm. John, as you talked about, it is the carousel spinning at a chaotic pace in college football, and one of the targets for Oklahoma is supposedly Cliff Kingsbury, the head coach of the Cardinals. Do you see any NFL coach leaving the ranks of the National Football League to return to college?
Well, that thing with Cliff Kingsbury, Adam Schefter tweeted that, and I'm sure it came from his agent, Eric Burkhart, because Kingsbury's got 1 year left on his contract. Now, they're going to give him a new contract, an extension, but with all this going on, the agent leaks it, and then they panic. But what I can't wait to see, what NFL coach is going to say, I want that kind of money? The NFL keeps those head coaches' contracts quiet. Like, I could say Bill Belichick's making $20 million a year. Nobody's going to dispute it. He's not going to say, no, I'm not. He's going to say, yes, I am. But these NFL coaches, when they see a league sign a $10.7 billion network television contract, and the ones that have been the most successful, like Belichick, you would think they'd want more money. Mm-hmm. And but I, as far as seeing, Pete Carroll's too old. He had his greatest success at USC, and he's 70. And I was maybe a young coordinator. You know, for a while they thought LSU would go after Joe Brady at Carolina. Maybe they wanted to hit a grand slam instead of a just home run, so they went after Brian Kelly. And I think, I don't blame these coaches for leaving. The kind of money they're talking about is obscene. And yes, is it bad to do it at this time of year? It's terrible. But you've got to look out for number one and your family first. And I don't know anybody that turned down that kind of money.
Our guest, John McClain of the Houston Chronicle, as he joins us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline. John, when you take a look at what have been some serious roller coaster rides, peaks and valleys between some teams that you thought might be the class of a conference or another, how do you trust a team like Buffalo that can look so bad as it did against Indianapolis, but then come back and take care of a really undermanned New Orleans franchise the way they did on Thanksgiving?
Well, no offense to Jimmy, New Orleans has gone straight down the tubes because of the quarterback problems. And I read where they were running Taysom Hill with the first team. Put him out there and let him play. You know, you're not going to win with Trevor Siemian. They're paying Taysom Hill all that money. Put him out there and give him a chance. Let's see what he's got. As far as Buffalo, Buffalo plays New England twice. Monday night, great Monday night game. Buffalo hosting New England. Then Buffalo's got to go to Tampa. And then after Carolina at home, they go to New England. Now, the last two are pushovers at home with the Falcons and the Jets, but they did lose to Jacksonville. New England right now, Patriots six in a row, averaging 35.2 points. They have the biggest, their differential between points scored and points allowed is the best in the NFL. And it's with a rookie quarterback. Their defense is playing great. Kansas City has won four in a row. In those four games, they're giving up 11.7 points a game. If their defense keeps playing like that, you know, I'm a big Chiefs fan with Patrick Mahomes in there, but their schedule, they don't play one team with a losing record. Denver, Las Vegas home, Chargers on the road, Pittsburgh home, at Cincinnati, at Denver. That is a brutal schedule. But Kansas City's hot, and if Mahomes plays as well as his defense consistently, they can keep it up. And Washington last night, you know, it's amazing. Washington's right now 5-6, and they've got the last playoff spot in the NFC if the playoffs started today. But there's some hot teams, and Dallas has lost two in a row, lost three of four. At this time last year, for everybody that's got a 6-5 team they're a fan of, at this time last year, Tampa Bay was 6-5, about to go 7-5 and never lose again, including four playoff victories in which they averaged 32 points a game and waylaid the Chiefs 31-9 in the Super Bowl. So any of these teams, if they stay hot or get hot, is capable of doing what they did last year in Tampa.
Is Mac Jones your rookie of the year?
Oh, gosh, Jimmy, I don't know how anybody else could be in the running. Before the season, I picked Najee Harris, the running back of the Steelers, because their running game last year was worse in the league, knowing how much they want to run the ball. They still can't run the ball. They're 28. But Mac Jones, he's been good, not great, but he hasn't turned the ball over. I saw Sunday through a short pass turned into a long touchdown. He's managing the game. They're playing great defense. They're making clutch plays around him, and he's going to be, I'm guessing he'll be the unanimous winner.
Jalen Hurts, there are moments when he's had nice games and other times he's been horrible. What do you think of Hurts as quarterback for Philadelphia?
In their last five games, they've averaged 200 yards a game rushing, and they're still 5-7. They just got beat by the Giants. There's a reason they were making a big push for Deshaun Watson. And they're going to have three number one picks, and right now all of them are going to be high. And Watson rejected them because he can do that with a no-trade clause. But Hurts, it's his second year. I don't know if they'll continue to pursue Watson, and he'll tell the Texans, no, forget about it. But Hurts is a great runner, but he's got to be able to throw better. Now, in his defense, Jalen Reagor, his receiver, dropped two touchdown passes right in his hands. If he'd have caught one, we wouldn't be having this conversation.
Right.
Hey, John, before we let you go, and we always appreciate your time, what do you think is behind Coach Culley benching safety Justin Reed?
They have team rules, and if you break team rules, you got to pay the price. They've had three guys this year they've disciplined, and from what I understand, he got it into it with a player, and then it became in with other players involved in a meeting in which Culley was leading the meeting, and it got it just kind of got out of hand. So Reed, if you could call me going into that game, tell me one player on this team will never be a disciplinary issue, and it's not like he missed a practice or it's not like he didn't show up or he missed a function. He just got into it with some players in a meeting, and they said that's not good, and so they benched him for that Jets game, and they blew a 14-3 lead and got beat 21-14. But it wasn't because he wasn't playing. It's because their offense went straight down the toilet from 11 minutes left in the first half through the rest of the game.
And now they try and bounce back and get a win over the Colts in their second game, right?
Well, they'll try to bounce back, and all they'll do is they'll be like one of those big old rubber things people put on and bounce around and fall down when you hit somebody. Yeah. It'll be like a demolition derby when they go out there against Jonathan Taylor. It was 31-3 in the first game. I don't think it'll be that bad here because Tyrod Taylor threw two touchdown passes for a 14-3 lead before the offense stunk it up. In the Tennessee game, he ran for two touchdowns. So they're capable of scoring two touchdowns and getting beaten 31-14.
All right. Hey, John, we always appreciate it. Thank you so much. Good luck with everything this week, and we'll talk to you next Tuesday.
John and Jimmy, I look forward to it. Thank you very much, and Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays to everybody.
We sure do appreciate that. Thank you. John McClain joining us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline. We'll get a break coming up a final half hour to today's edition of Sports Talk. Mark Pankratz will join us to talk Tennessee hoops. And up next, it's your chance to win. It's the Sports Fix at 6. So stay with us on 99.1, the Sports Animal.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit. And you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.